We begin with the death of another American at the hands of the Islamic State, this time U.S. aid worker Peter Kasich. Kasich's brutal beheading was circulated in a video released by ISIS this weekend. His family has requested that the public remember Peter for his work in Syria, and we wanted to take a moment to do that now. In a statement on Sunday, Kasich's family said, "We prefer our son is written about and remembered for his important work and the love he shared with family and friends, not in the manner the hostage takers would use to manipulate Americans and further their cause." Michael Downey is a freelance journalist and photographer currently based in Beirut and a former friend and colleague of Kasich's. And he says Peter's smile and willingness to help made him an unforgettable figure amidst the chaos of war.
He was actually one of the first people I met when I came to Beirut. And he was crashing on my roommate and I's couch, Josh Wood. And he stayed there for almost a month while he was looking for another apartment. And, you know, it's a really tight-knit community here. Journalists, aid workers, and, you know, everyone kind of watches each other's backs. And, you know, it's like a family. And he really was key in introducing me to this family of people, you know, the same group that's been the past month been working tirelessly to try and appeal for his release and, you know, contacting everyone and anyone. Brilliant guy. I remember the first time I saw him, you know, it's just he always had this infectious big smile, and he called everyone, you know, brother. Yeah, like it didn't matter if, you know, he didn't know you. He could always see good in people, and just really, really positive guy.
Now, by the time you knew Peter Kasich, of course, he was already a veteran of the Iraq War. I guess he joined up in 2004, and he was working on his aid organization in Syria. Tell us a little bit about that transition for him, as far as you knew, from being a war fighter and a soldier to someone really trying to help.
You know, I don't know much exactly about the, you know, his time in the military there. It was something he didn't necessarily talk about a lot. But you know, it was very clear that he had witnessed firsthand that the damage that war does, and especially the deep scars that it brought on the region here. And you know, there was a quote from him saying, you know, I could be another young man with a gun, or I can actually help people. And he realized that the only way things are going to get better is to really reject any violence or war and help individual people. Because, I mean, obviously, he'd seen not only in Iraq, but of course the horrific conditions in Syria that people were stuck in.
Still, Michael Downey, a lot of people feel just the same way that Peter Kasich did, but they don't necessarily take it upon themselves to go deep into a war zone to help people directly. It sounds like he was really driven.
Yeah, he was a remarkable individual. A lot of people would have been deterred going there, you know, but he knew he was best suited with his training and everything and his medic experience that he would be best suited in an ambulance, first responder, stabilizing people, getting to the hospital, bringing medical supplies. He knew, you know, exactly the bare bones, what was needed to run a medical clinic and, you know, what would make the difference between saving someone's life. And he knew the risks in these areas, but he also knew that where he was needed most, he had to be there.
Michael, how would you or maybe your friends interpret Peter Kasich's conversion to Islam? That happened while he was in captivity. Was he religious?
You know, I can't say much about that just because no one knows the exact circumstances of it. But, you know, he had a deep connection with the land, the culture, and the people here. I remember he observed Ramadan with the Syrians in Tripoli, and you know, just out of solidarity. But yeah, it's hard to say.
Were you in touch with Peter's family during the time that all of you were trying to coordinate for his release?
That was run on point by Elliot Stemp. He was working with Pete in Gaziantep in Turkey for his aid organization, Sarah, and then has been also been integral in trying to get information, see, you know, just any kind of negotiation. And he's been on point with the family, because obviously, the family has been, you know, there's a lot of people reaching out to them, and we've been, you know, trying to respect their privacy. And then, you know, each person has their role in this.
Well, Michael Downey, before we let you go, what would you like the world to remember about your friend Peter Kasich?
I'd like them to remember that, the young man who never gave up, and he tried to always do his best and just be kind to people. You know, it's too easy to perpetuate hate, and it's harder to do the right thing, but he would do that. He would stick to his principles. And also, you know, more importantly, you know, why he went there, because there are many people still stuck in this brutal conflict with no way out. And, you know, he went there to help them. So, you know, to not forget all those people who have died or are suffering and are still in this.
Michael Downey, thank you.
Thank you.
Michael Downey is a freelance journalist and photographer based in Beirut and a former friend and colleague of Abdulrahman Peter Kasich. In a departure from previously released execution footage, the film depicting Peter Kasich's death also included a history of the Islamic State since the 2003 invasion of Iraq, as well as footage of the mass execution of Syrian servicemen. And perhaps it's no coincidence that the latest video surfaced just hours after Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff General Martin Dempsey said that the battle against ISIS was starting to turn in favor of the U.S. and its allied forces in Iraq and Syria. Joining me from Baghdad in Iraq is the BBC's Hugh Sykes. Hi, Hugh.
Hello, Todd.
Good to have you. Hugh, Martin Dempsey told U.S. troops over the weekend, as I said, that ISIS had pretty much peaked. Does anyone in Baghdad have that sense?
No. I think it's more hope, inshallah, than an actual belief that they've peaked. One thing they seem to be doing more and more is giving the impression that they're retreating from certain areas, and the Iraqi armed forces go in and then ISIS come back and surround them. Classic military trap. A lot of people here are talking about something else that General Martin Dempsey said while he was here in Iraq over the weekend. He described IS rather hazardously, in my view, as, and I quote, a bunch of midgets running around with a radical ideology, and he described them as not a 10-foot-tall force. And then within 24 hours almost of him saying that, almost certainly coincidentally, but a bit of a hostage to fortune, within a day of him saying that, we hear about Peter Kasich and the 14 presumed Syrian Air Force and Army officers being the victims of mass murder by IS. So slightly odd statement to describe a very nasty, ruthless, psychopathic, mass-murdering enemy as a bunch of midgets when they're clearly not.
And that was a surprising comment coming from the Joint Chiefs Chairman. Do you think that was just motivational boasting for troops? I mean, the president himself already has said he shouldn't have called ISIS a junior varsity terrorist squad.
Well, yes, exactly. And I'm sure that was meant for the audience, but I don't believe the general is so naive as to believe that what he says to a large audience of American military people here in Iraq is not going to leak out into the general public. The whole issue of Islamic State is, of course, dominating people's minds here in Iraq. In Baghdad, most people think that the city is safe from any kind of invasion or approach by ISIS. But they did get into a town south of Baghdad two or three weeks ago, very near one of the holy Shia shrine cities, Karbala, and they're only driven out of that town with the help of Iranian-backed militias. And another effect of ISIS's advance has been a flood of refugees from some of the areas which have been taken over by ISIS, particularly Tal Afar and Mosul right up in the north, and Tikrit and Samarra further down to the south, and they're even in a town just 60 kilometres, about 40 miles north of Baghdad. So it's in the background all the time with almost everybody that you speak to here. And I, in fact, went to a refugee camp here in Baghdad this morning, a place of astonishing squalor and disorganization. It's a school where the school classes still continue, but refugees from the far north of Iraq are also living in some of the classrooms. There's barely any sanitation, and there's nowhere to throw any rubbish, and there's no rubbish collection, and the place is a squalid mess. And it's as a result of ISIS advances into parts of Iraq.
And Hugh Sykes, I mean, it's one thing for residents of Baghdad to feel like their country is safe. It's another thing, or their city is safe, I should say. It's quite another thing for them to feel like their government, their country is safe. And another thing still for them to be experiencing the return of what's nearly 3,000 U.S. troops now.
Well, yes. Not quite yet at the moment, but certainly the 1,200 here at the moment and 1,500 have been promised by Washington, although there could be obstruction from Congress, who knows. Back to General Dempsey, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He also said in Washington last week to the House Armed Services Committee that he was seriously considering, not necessarily recommending, but seriously considering, his words, the return of a modest number of combat troops to Baghdad. And revealingly, I spoke to the leader of one of those awakening movements who, if you remember, were crucial in joining up with the Americans 5 or 6 years ago and driving al-Qaeda in Iraq, mostly out of Iraq, that joint operation between the awakening and the United States. Here was this awakening member now, whose new enemy is ISIL, the Islamic State, telling me twice that he wants American combat troops to come back to Iraq because he believes that is the only way for ISIS, Islamic State, to be defeated. American combat troops alongside Iraqi armed forces, not just these train and assist people.
Advisors, and there are plenty of critics right here in the United States who think the same thing and that the White House's strategy ultimately will require those types of ground troops. Hugh Sykes of the BBC in Baghdad, thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd. Great to be with The Takeaway again.
Good to have you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.